So when I interviewed for this position many years ago, probably 18 years ago now, one of the questions that the pastor nominating committee asked me was, do you preach from the lectionary? And I said, well, no, not too often. I haven't before. Do you want me to? And they said, oh, no. The last few pastors that we've had, that's all they've done. And we'd like to do something a little different. And so I said, okay. And so how many of you know what the lectionary is? Some do and some don't. Okay, good. So this first part will be a little educational for you, okay? The lectionary, actually comes from the Latin word lectio, meaning to read. Or a reading. And so the lectionary is a set of readings that some monks at some point who had not enough to do kind of came up with this cycle of reading through mostly the whole Bible in 3 years' time if you read the daily lectionary. And so every day there's a morning psalm and an evening psalm, and then there's an Old Testament passage and an epistle and a New Testament or a gospel reading. So you basically have five readings a day. And if you read this, you pretty much read the whole Bible in 3 years' time, which is a good way to go, I think, right? And then they have different readings on Sundays for worship. So you're able to read the lectionary on your own, and then come to church and hear something different to kind of expand things. And if you're interested in doing this, by the way, Google, for those of you that Google, Presbyterian Church USA daily lectionary readings, and you'll get it. You can get an app for it. You can have it on your phone every day, the readings of the day. And it's a great thing. So the positives of the lectionary is that it's kind of a tried and true way of going through the services, and pastors kind of approach it differently, preachers approach it differently. Sometimes they'll look at all five passages and they'll kind of try and weave a motif through all of them. Other times they'll just see one passage and say, I'm just going to focus on the gospel reading this day, and maybe the next week they'll just focus on the Old Testament reading or whatever. Generally speaking, they kind of have a theme that runs through all of them. This morning, we're kind of focusing on the Old Testament passage, the epistle, and the gospel all together, so that we're kind of focusing on all of that because I want to get into that feel for lectionary. The other nice thing about the lectionary is that they're geared towards the seasons and the liturgical calendar. So during Advent, we read Advent readings. Makes sense. During Lent, we read Lent readings. There's Transfiguration Sunday. We don't focus on that a lot here, but and then Pentecost Sunday. So there's readings for those specific days, which means that we're reading the right passages for the season. I have friends that will go just through a single book, which we've done. I tend to not like to go through an entire long book because by the time you're done, people are like, oh my gosh, are we almost done with it? I had a friend that preached through Romans and it took him almost 2 years, and he said he almost killed the church. People were like, not Romans again, please, anything. We'll even take Leviticus at this point. So in nearly 18 years, we haven't done the lectionary. And in some ways, I kind of think the pastors that do it, it's almost a crutch. Like, they're not really, they don't have to think ahead and kind of look at the congregation and say, what does the congregation, Lord, what do you want to tell the congregation? I'm just going to use the lectionary because it's there. So, but it is a good discipline. And so that's what we're going to be doing this year for at least this coming year. So I hope you enjoy it. I'm looking forward to it myself. It's going to stretch me a little bit. The funny thing was that I kind of felt like, you know, some of the lectionary readings, they say, well, you know, kind of skipping out of the hard ones and this and that. So So what happens? The first Sunday that I go to the lectionary, the gospel reading has to be one of the most difficult passages to interpret in the entire Bible. And we'll get to that in a minute. But you'll see what I'm saying. It's kind of funny. When I read it and I went, are you kidding me? God has a sense of humor. Trust me. So the Old Testament passage that Karen read a moment ago, Isaiah 35, this wonderful passage. Isaiah was a prophet that lived during the 8th century before Christ. He lived during the reigns of King Ahaz, King Hezekiah, and King Manasseh of the southern kingdom of Israel. This is kind of the pattern of the kings of the people of Israel. Ahaz, bad king. Hezekiah, good king. Manasseh, bad king. It kind of backed and forth. More bad than good, actually. But Isaiah wrote primarily during the reign of King Hezekiah, but he was looking forward. And remember, this is when Israel split into two kingdoms. There's the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. And the northern kingdom had already been conquered by Assyria at this point. So the southern kingdom was all by themselves. And Isaiah was looking forward saying, our fate is going to be the exact same as the northern kingdom if we continue down the path that we are going. So pay attention, repent, stay close to God, don't rely on other countries, rely on God only. And the people of Israel, depending on what the king said, sometimes relied on God and sometimes they did not. One of the great aspects of Isaiah is he is so messianic. By that, I mean he prophesies for the Messiah. When we come to Advent, we're going to read a lot of Isaiah because Isaiah talks about the Prince of Peace coming, that root of Jesse that will be born, all of these things. Isaiah is the one that talks about this. Hundreds of years before Jesus is born, Isaiah is foretelling it. But this messianic passage is wonderful because it describes the Messiah as being one that will bring sight to the blind, hearing to the deaf, to heal the lame, to open the mouths of the mutes. And then we have this wonderful passage, water will break forth in the wilderness, streams in the desert. And Isaiah loves this imagery. In fact, this is kind of imagery throughout the Bible, that streams in the desert. And if you've ever been in the desert and you see this kind of wasteland all around, and then there's this one stream running through, and there's life where that stream is, right? That's the imagery here, that even though we may be living in a desolate area, a scorched land is one of the comments that's made in Isaiah 35:7, which actually speaks to the mirage, that you look and you see what you think is water, and you go running towards it, and then it's just wasteland still. In fact, this imagery of streams in the desert became a devotional book. How many of you have seen Streams in the Desert? Yeah, read it years ago, right? It was written in 1925. This copy, I think, is the 53rd printing in 1969. So it was my parents, not mine. But it's a wonderful devotional. There's a devotional for every day of the year, a great resource and something I think is powerful even today. As I was preparing for today and reading through the different scriptures of the day, the Spirit of God just kind of spoke to me and said, today should be all about this idea of streams in the desert. Streams in the desert, water coming up in a dry and thirsty place. And why that's important is I want to ask you the question. What are the desert places in your life right now? What are the dry and thirsty places? Where do you feel scorched and parched land in your own life? Scripture reminds us that God brings life to those areas. God brings healing to those areas. Mark, the gospel reading, kind of shares one of these stories, or two of these stories. So I'm going to read that now. Mark chapter 7, 24 through 37. That's page 42 in the New Testament of your pew Bibles. Mark chapter 7, verse 24. From there Jesus set out and went away to the region of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know where he was. Yet he could not escape notice. But a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about him, and she came and bowed down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. And he said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Then he said to her, "For saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." So she went home and found the child lying on the bed and the demon gone. Then he returned from the region of Tyre and went by way of Sidon toward the Sea of Galilee in the region of the Decapolis. And they brought to him a deaf man who had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to lay his hand on him. He took him aside in private, away from the crowd, and put his fingers into his ears, and he spat and touched his tongue. Then looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened." And immediately his ears were opened, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. Then Jesus ordered them to tell no one, but the more he ordered them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. They were astounded beyond measure, saying, "He has done everything well. He even makes the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." Jesus shows these wonderful examples of bringing healing to dry areas of the world. These two areas that Jesus went to were off the beaten path. They were not in the area of the Israelites. They were in Gentile places. And he went. And he kind of went to get away. And yet this woman comes running up to him and says, "Can you heal my daughter?" And his response just boggles my mind. This is what I'm saying, is this is one of the hardest passages to interpret. A woman comes up and says, "Can you heal my daughter?" And he says, "Look at lady, I'm here to heal the sons and daughters of Israelites, not some Syrophoenician. I'm not going to help the people who we consider to be dogs." I mean, first of all, he says no. This is the only time Jesus said no. Second of all, he calls her a dog. Even today it's not a good thing. But back then it was even worse. It's kind of a head scratcher. I mean, and I love to hear the theologians and biblical scholars try and, you know, I got no good answer for you. I'm sorry. I mean, he was kind of rude to her. Some would say, he was testing the woman to see if her faith was resolved. Some would say that he was simply verbalizing what the disciples were thinking, and so he kind of verbalized it to expose it and then to test them, actually. Frankly, I don't have a good answer, and I'm pretty sure this is going to be one of the first things I ask Jesus when I get to heaven. Dude, what was going on with the Syrophoenician woman? I'm just going to ask him flat out. Hopefully he'll tell me. He'll probably not. But we have to ask a key question, though. Was the woman passing a test or winning an argument? Because Jesus said no, and she kind of argued with him. And that was to her benefit. In fact, he doesn't actually flat out say no. He says, "The children have to be fed first." So it's really more of a wait. But her response is both logical and theological. Well, even when the children are fed, the dogs eat the crumbs from the floor. In fact, that's the main reason I have a dog, because I don't have to sweep so much. She just wants the crumbs that fall from the table. And her persistence persuades Jesus to do new things in her life, to bring healing in her life. And just a side note, this is one of the few experiences where Jesus heals from distance. He doesn't go and touch her. He doesn't go into her presence at all. He just heals from distance. In fact, he says, since you said those things, your daughter's healed. In the context of our readings today, though, I think she and the deaf mute man both serve as desert places. These were places that weren't experiencing the grace of God. They weren't experiencing the presence of God, and Jesus came and brought healing, streams of life in the desert places. And then we get to this passage in James chapter 2, and I read just the last part of the lectionary reading. The lectionary reading actually has the entire chapter, James chapter 2, and it's pretty long. But it's that one about partiality. When James says, look, you guys, talking to the church, that's the Lance translation, look, you guys, if somebody comes into your church and they're really wealthy and you say, oh, hey, come up here, sit in the best seat. We're going to do all these things for you. Have the best cup of coffee. Have the best donuts. And then somebody else comes in who's coming and living on the streets and has no money. And you say, oh, you know what? Go stand over there because we don't want you to bother people. Well, James says, aren't you showing partiality? Isn't that wrong? Aren't we all sons and daughters in God's kingdom? Shouldn't we all be treated the same way? And he kind of says, yeah, you have to have works to show your faith. Now, he makes this one statement that kind of scratches your head a little bit, and he says, faith does not bring salvation. Well, yes, it does. But the fact is that when he says that, he's saying, you really don't have faith if it's not showing through in your life. So he says, faith without works. It's not like you have to have works in order to get salvation, but if you say you believe and then nothing changes in your life and you're not showing your faith, then your faith isn't really real, right? It's just lip service. So what good is it to say, go in peace, be warm, and be filled when a person's hurting and hungry? We should do everything we can to help that person. And for me, these were desert places in the early church. They needed life. They needed healing. They needed to recognize, oh, we have this great church together, but we've kind of separated these people over here, and that's not right. I keep doing that. Sorry, guys. I'm not saying that about you at all. We love you. And frankly, I have to say I'm pretty proud of our church here. I don't feel like this is an issue for us. I don't feel like people treat certain people in this congregation differently than other people. And in fact, that's part of our tradition where very few people know actually how much people donate to the church. We keep that confidential because we don't want people to treat people differently. We don't want to say, well, they tithe a lot, and therefore their opinion matters a lot, as opposed to, well, they never give anything, so we don't care. If we lose them, it's not going to hurt our bottom line. We don't, okay. So we'll just recognize that there's a cell phone going off or a video game or something. So Jesus was sent into the world to preach the gospel to the poor. In fact, when John the Baptist's disciples came and said, are you the Messiah? Jesus didn't say yes or no. He said, well, go back and tell John that the blind can see, the deaf can speak or can hear, the mute can speak, the lame are walking. Go tell him that, because that was a recognition that the Messiah was here. So if that's what Jesus did, and we're followers of Jesus, shouldn't we be doing the same thing? Shouldn't we be following his example? Shouldn't we be sources of living water in the desert places? Streams in the desert. So I want to get back to that question. Where are you experiencing dry places in your life? This is what hit me when I was going through these passages this past week. And it just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. where are you experiencing? Because we all have dry places in our lives. We all have places where we say, I need healing here. I need new life here. I'm experiencing a desert place in this one area of my life. Other areas may be great. And we can even ask that for the church as well. Where are we experiencing desert places in our church? But today, I want us to focus on ourselves. So I'm going to do something I don't do often. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And I want you to pray. I want you to ask the Spirit of God to reveal the desert places in your life right now. Close your eyes. Perhaps it's your own relationship with God. Perhaps it's a relationship with a loved one that you haven't spoken to for years, and you need healing in that area. I don't know how many times I've talked to people and they've said, I haven't talked to my sister in 20 years. We had an argument and we haven't talked again. Perhaps it has to do with a physical health issue or financial stability. Maybe you need work. Whatever the case be, pray that God sends streams of life to that desert place. Pray that God sends healing. I'm going to give you a moment for silent prayer. May God send streams of living water into the desert place of your life. Let's pray silently now.